Hey guys, and welcome to episode 6 of the Huddle Up podcast for KCR Radio. My name is Megan Townsley, and I am joined again today by Jake Byrne and Nicole Beckelman. There is so much to talk about tonight, so let's go ahead and get started. So first off, I just wanted to go over the SDSU versus Hawaii game from November 14th this past Saturday. So I actually had the opportunity to go and report on that game, which was probably one of the coolest things I've done in my first 20 years of life. Like, that was so incredible. I had my own little press box and just got to watch the game. Like, we were isolated since no fans were there, but it was still super fun to watch. So really impressive game for San Diego State, coming off of a loss the week before to San Jose State. SDSU actually went 28-0 at the half. They shut out the Warriors, which was really impressive. Coming off of the San Jose State game, the Aztecs actually only ran for 100 yards that game, and normally they're known for having a great run game with Greg Bell, who actually is the first SDSU player to have 4 consecutive rushing or games with 100 plus rushing yards. So that is definitely a key player to watch. So coming back to this game, SDSU versus Hawaii, they ran for 200 plus rushing yards, which we saw them finally get back to the running game. But Greg Bell actually in that game had his longest career run for 69 yards and had 2 touchdowns. And then another star player of the game was Jordan Bird. He had an insane 51-yard run for the first touchdown of the entire game. So he ended up, that one literally just blew past all of the Hawaii defenders. So that one was super cool to watch live. But yeah, that was honestly, again, one of the coolest experiences I think I've done. Looking forward to getting credentials to go to other games, hopefully. Even though the game was an hour and a half away and Carson City wasn't that bad of a drive, but that's what I have to say about that.
Awesome. Well, I'm glad you had a good experience there. Sounds like a good time.
Yeah, that was a classic, just absolute demolishing. I've been saying this since day one. The only guy you need to know right now is Greg Bell.
Exactly.
Even in the loss last week, he still had 109 yards and a touchdown on 25 carries. And he gave Hawaii the business, 19 carries, 160 yards, and 2 scores. He's a couple big runs. This guy is the real deal. And when the Aztecs win, it's because of this guy. So yeah, right now it's the running game is awesome. They got a nice committee going right now, but it's a one man show for the most part in Greg Bell.
Yeah, exactly. Jake, agreed. I have a question for you. How do you think Carson Baker has to improve to help the Aztecs do better in the upcoming games, because he actually had no passing touchdowns in this game and only threw for 30 yards. So how do you think that he could the offensive whole could include their passing game?
You know, I haven't seen a ton of film on Carson Baker. And when you watch a football game on TV, you only get a sideline angle, essentially. You don't get to see what the quarterback is seeing. And that's why the film is so important. So I'd have to go look back at that. But I mean, they're not going to ask him to do a ton, especially in games that they know are very winnable. And especially when you have guys like Greg Bell, Chance Bell, and the other committee of guys that they have at running back, they just have an absolute surplus. So they're just riding the run game right now. And it's just a variety of handoffs and not a ton of different looks that you're going to see. It's just a lot of Greg Bell, a lot of physical downhill running. They're not asking Carson Baker to do a ton. And right now he just doesn't look super comfortable. And I think with the weird off season, maybe he just hasn't had enough time to really establish chemistry with the other guys on the team, especially the wideouts. So he's still trying to get his feet under him, but yeah, I would just say he just needs to get more comfortable, I think, with the offense. And again, but San Diego State, they're not asking him to do a ton. So there's not a ton of pressure on him right now. Obviously, it was really disappointing to see San Diego State lose to San Jose State, who's basically been a bottom feeder in the Mountain West for years, or probably since they've joined the conference. So yeah, that was kind of disappointing, but you know what? It's a learning experience. San Diego State, I guess we're technically Mountain West contenders, but it's tough to compete with Boise State, and they got a good quarterback. And when they're healthy, Boise State's a tough out. So maybe this isn't necessarily the year, but it's going to be a learning experience for Carson Baker.
Do you think Carson Baker's poor, well, I won't say poor performance, I guess they won, but do you think that has anything to do with the lack of receiver talent on San Diego State's team?
I think it's a variety of things. I think it's play calling. I think it's, you know, it is a little bit to do with the receivers. I think it's just a lot of it with the weird COVID offseason Mountain West didn't even expect to play football. I don't know what San Diego State's training looked like in the off season when they, like, there was technically no Mountain West season to be played in 2020. Maybe they were practicing the whole time. Maybe they weren't. I don't know, especially in California. I don't know what the restrictions look like for any football program in California, especially in college right now, or at least what they were. And so I think it's just a combination of things. And San Diego State has always been run first. Even when they changed to the spread last year, it's still been run first. And because we always get the running backs to make the offense go. So Carson Baker, I think he just needs a little more time to get comfortable, because right now he just doesn't look comfortable at all.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. San Diego State is going to go actually away to Reno to play the Wolfpack next week. So hopefully we're going to have another really good run game then. But okay, Nicole, I'm sorry, I have to switch it up. Let's go NFL week 10 going to week 11. Can Russ cook? Can Russ cook anymore?
Russ can't cook without ingredients.
Okay, there you go.
Russ can't cook without ingredients, guys. He's thrown so many interceptions. I don't even think he's right now in the race for the MVP anymore. Maybe if he comes back with some great performances this Thursday against Cardinals and the week after, but it's been a rough couple weeks for the Seahawks fans. I think one thing that'll really help in Thursday's game is I think Chris Carson is coming back, which will really help the Seahawks. He averages, I think, 4.5 yards per run, which will certainly help Russ not throw as many interceptions, because he won't be forced to throw the ball. He has another option, giving it to a running back. But the Seahawks, their injuries, I know, like, their two cornerbacks, I think, are both hurt. So they have, like, second and third string cornerbacks playing. I think Tyler Lockett, I think he was hurt. He's questionable for Thursday's game. So it's been a rough couple weeks. But you know what? Russell Wilson, there are times when looks like there's no hope for the Seahawks, and somehow he ends up pulling something, creating something, and something works for them. So I guess that's what I'm hoping for on Thursday.
Yeah, Russell Wilson, the best way to describe the Seahawks situation and Russell Wilson's relationship with them is he's like the super awesome flex seal that has just been able to cover all of Seattle's problems. And now it's finally starting to wear down, and you're starting to see these glaring holes with Seattle's roster. And now Russell Wilson, he's starting to force some plays that aren't there. He's trying to be a little too much. It's too much hero ball. It was a little too much Carson Wentz the last 2 weeks. And that's why 4 picks in 2 games, that's not Russell Wilson at all. And then not to mention 3 picks against Arizona. And that ended up costing the game. But yeah, it's unfortunate seeing what's happening with Seattle, because it seems like Russell Wilson's burning out. It's like, I think there's a lot of guys that are seeing what Russell Wilson does, and they're like, wow, look at that guy. That's insane. Like, if you asked Aaron Rodgers to be Russell Wilson every week, he wouldn't put up with it. He would just quit on the team probably, because he doesn't want to do that. I think he's capable of doing that, but he doesn't want to do that. And Russell Wilson, now eventually guys are just going to burn out. Like, the Seattle success was not sustainable. It was very unsustainable because of the defense, and it was super reliant on Russ, and it's not a recipe for success. And now you're starting to see that the kitchen is burning in Seattle right now. And they gotta fix some issues on defense if they want to be competitive down the stretch.
Agreed. Exactly, I love these metaphors.
Sometimes it's the only way for people to understand where you're coming from. That's why you always have to have the perfect analogy for everything.
Exactly. Speaking of the game on Thursday, Kyler Murray, he is a force to be reckoned with. I think he went into the season with a little chip on his shoulder, as he was kind of considered one of the underrated quarterbacks in the league, but I think he's really proving himself. He's reminding me a lot of Lamar Jackson's performance last season. He's a force to be reckoned with. I think he's definitely proving himself this season, and I think it'll show on Thursday's game.
Yeah, well, Murray, he's gone 5 straight games with a rushing touchdown, as a quarterback, which is already incredible. And a lot of people were only pegging him as someone who could just has an insane run game. But I mean, we have to talk about the Hail Mary. Hail Marys are just the best thing to watch in football, when he rolled out to his left, bombed it with 10 seconds left to DeAndre Hopkins, and he just made it look easy. Like, that is the best thing you could watch in football as a football fan, is just something like that you never expect to happen. So for sure, coming to the game on Thursday, I think the Cardinals are coming off of a high. Kyler Murray is red hot right now, and so my pick for that game is going to be the Cardinals, but it's going to be an interesting one to watch, especially after the rematch from last time.
For sure. I think the Seahawks are definitely hungry for a win, as their first loss of the season was to the Cardinals, but with the Seahawks, all of their injuries right now, doesn't look to be the best for them. But then again, you never know with Russell Wilson. He could come out and shock us all, so we just have to wait till Thursday.
Yeah, it's actually the Hail Mary is what they're calling it right now.
There you go.
yeah, that was a crazy play. And it was cool to see the Cardinals win, because they're so exciting with Kyler Murray. And it honestly, if he stays at this pace, he probably will win the MVP. It just seems like. And they have been getting a little bit lucky. Like, they got lucky against the Seahawks. They got lucky against the Bills. And you know what? It really sucks for Josh Allen, because there's been a lot of question marks about him not rising to the occasion against, like, playoff caliber teams. And he made the comeback at home a couple weeks ago against the Rams. And the Rams look like a top five defense now. So that's a nice win. And that win has aged pretty well. And then you came into Sunday, and it seemed like he led the game-winning drive with 34 seconds to go. And then Kyler Murray said, "Hold my beer." So that was crazy. And, you know, props to the Cardinals, because that's the magic of Kyler Murray. It seems like he's been the edge in the super close games this season, just like Russell Wilson has been early in the season for the Seattle Seahawks until now. So, yeah, the Cardinals, you know, they're not a perfect team, but they're really exciting, and they placed a lot of they gave a lot of attention to the offense in the offseason, and bringing in DeAndre Hopkins has totally paid off so far, and it totally paid off in the Buffalo game.
Speaking of new receivers in the league, tell me about Antonio Brown's performance with the Bucs this past weekend. How do we think he's gelling with Brady and his Buccaneers?
Antonio Brown, I think he's still getting adjusted to the offense. It's only been, like, what, a second game with the team so far this season. And they got a lot of mouths to feed. I think people need to realize that. Like, you still got Mike Evans, Chris Godwin. Both are borderline top 10 receivers, if not top 10 wide receivers in the NFL. So they're going to get their looks. You still have Ronald Jones, who they're feeding heavily, and Leonard Fournette. I don't even know if Fournette's, like, fully acclimated yet at this point. And Fournette's capable of being – he's capable of being a top 10 back, and I think he's capable of being even top five because he's shown this new receiving ability. So, yeah, the Buccaneers, they have so many weapons right now and so many weapons at Tom's disposal that it's like you're not going to see Antonio Brown have, like, a super nice fantasy output every week. Like, you're just not going to see that, because they can afford to just ride the hot hand, and they got, like, a myriad of options right now for Tom Brady. So, you know what? Yeah, like, we haven't seen enough of AB yet. You're going to see more of him. But, like, I you can't expect him to have, like, the super nice, flashy fantasy stat line that fantasy owners are hoping for. Like, that's probably not going to happen just because of how many different things Tim Bay can do with their offense.
It makes me so mad that the Buccaneers are good, because there's so many players on that team that I just really don't like. But I guess something's working over in Florida for them, so good for them, I guess.
Yeah, I want to really take it back to Saints versus the Bucks. I feel like there's a lot of shocking aspects of the game. I mean, 38-3, the Bucks just got squashed by the Saints. But I think Tom Brady had three interceptions in that game, and what I thought was really interesting was he was pressured 46% of the time, versus in the game against the Bucs against Carolina, he was only pressured 22% of the time, didn't throw any interceptions. So I don't know if it's just the Saints against the Bucs is just a bad matchup for the Bucs, because if you're talking about Super Bowl contenders or playoff picture, Bucs are going to play the Saints again. We're going to see this matchup again. Hopefully Drew Brees will be back. But I mean, when we're talking, we wanted to get into the topic of how the Saints are underrated. So what do you guys think about that, especially looking at that game against the Bucs?
I feel bad for the Saints right now. I liked Drew Brees, and I just feel bad that he got hurt. I don't know why. I feel like I have a special little place in my heart for Drew Brees. He just shaking his head. And I also feel bad because their backup quarterback is actually terrible. I was I forgot who I was talking to, but they said James Winston helps the offense just as much as he helps the defense by or the other team's defense because he throws so many interceptions. And I thought that I was like, yeah, I mean, okay, that's a valid argument. So maybe he'll shock us all, but I guess we'll just have to wait and see. Jake, why were you shaking your head?
I'm shaking my head because you only like the quarterbacks on teams that you know can't beat Russell Wilson and the Seahawks. Like, that's why you're hating on Tom Brady, because you know they're a serious threat to win the whole thing. And they're going to be raising the trophy in Tampa Bay, their home state.
I judge the players based, I think, on their character and how they like, present themselves. I think Drew Brees seems like a nice guy. I don't like Tom Brady just because I feel like the Deflategate, that's one red flag. He's a cheater, okay? I also just, I don't know, I just really don't like Tom Brady. And Drew Brees just seems like a nice family guy. So, I don't know.
Okay, Russell Wilson named his kid Wynn. Like, you can't tell me Russell Wilson you can't tell me Tom Brady's a more tryhard of a dad than Russell Wilson. I don't buy that.
Okay, Russell Wilson just seems like, okay, whenever Russell Wilson's interviewed and, like, he has these, like, amazing, like, scripted comebacks and, like, he just seems so nice. And, like, I feel like I've been waiting years for him to just mess up on something and just sound like a complete jerk, but he just doesn't. He's just a nice guy. I mean, he goes to the children's hospital every Tuesday. Like, he's just so sweet. And, like, I feel like there's been so many times that he's could have said something that just, where people perceive him as, like, just a jerk. But he's just not. I feel like that's actually just who he is. So.
You know what? On the football field, they're kind of struggling. And he looks like Mr. Limited now. So that's all I'm going to say about that.
All right. Well, we'll see this Thursday. This Thursday, if Russ has another poor performance, then you can come at me and make fun. Let's just wait till this Thursday. I have faith in Russ.
Yeah, that was a good debate right there. Okay, hold on. I got a question for you guys. How are the Steelers 9-0 right now? That is just it's mind-boggling to me, but at the same time, their defense is top 10 in the NFL. They've been having really good stops. How was Ben's performance in the last game? I actually don't know how he played in the last game. I think he had like a couple interceptions, but like their defense being led by TJ Watt, Joe Hayden, they've been on the mark, on the money the entire time. How are the Steelers 9-0 is my question.
I think you just explained it. I think you just said it.
Just answered my own question.
they've just been getting really lucky in a lot of the close ones. Like the game against the Titans, that could have easily gone Tennessee's way. And I think that it's very possible you get a rematch in the playoffs of that. And you know what? Like how are you beating? Like they're beating the Texans by a touchdown. Like, are you kidding me? And they beat a depleted Denver Broncos team in week two by 5 points. Week two on Monday. Yeah, like how do you beat like a depleted Denver Broncos team by 5 points? Like, I don't understand that. You beat the Giants in the week one opener with a new coach. They added Daniel Jones adjusting to a new system, and that team was one of the worst going into the season. The New York Giants had one of the worst rosters at the start of the season, and they only beat them by 10 points. Like, This hasn't been a super impressive 9-0, and I don't know if a lot of people understand that, especially all the Yinzers in Pittsburgh. So, like the Steelers lot, like they're gonna lose at some point, and they're probably gonna drop a couple games down the stretch. And while they are super balanced, I still think they have, like, losing Devin Bush is a huge loss for them because he is now like made himself a top five linebacker in the NFL. And then also at corner, they're not very good either. And so they've just been feeding off this pass rush right now that they have that's so good with TJ Watt and Bud Dupree. So the Steelers, they're bound to drop a game at some point. They do have an easy schedule. Like it looks like they have the Ravens on Thursday Night Football next week. And they have the Browns at home. And then they have the Bills on the road. So
sorry, as you were talking, Nico Mannion just got drafted to the Warriors. That was my face.
She was baffled.
Well, we are recording on November 18th at 8:46 p.m., which means the NBA draft is happening right now as we speak. There has been, well, I feel like the draft has been pretty predictable so far. Jake, go. What surprised you? What shocked you? Megan, what have you been looking at? Tell me something interesting.
You know what? I will say I really focused on the NBA draft like the first 10 to 15 minutes because I really wanted to see what the Warriors were going to do because they had a legitimate like pickle on their hands. They had to either choose between the better positional fit in center James Wiseman out of Memphis, or they could have gone with a higher upside, like technically a high risk, high reward, but I don't really consider him necessarily in that light as the media and the average NBA fan does, LaMelo Ball. And that's what happened because Minnesota took Anthony Edwards. He said he wanted to play for them. So that happened. So the Warriors had their pick of LaMelo Ball or James Wiseman. And I'm sure that's probably who they were considering if they had the number one pick. And anyways, they went with Wiseman. And that kind of surprised me because Curry's been dealing with a lot of injuries the last couple years. And then Klay Thompson is coming off an Achilles injury. And there's a report tonight surfaced that he might have this Achilles injury that might be worse than it actually is. And if that's like the Achilles is the worst tendon to injure in any sport. Like that is the hardest one to recover from. And if Klay has like some kind of complication with his Achilles, then like that is not good for the Warriors and their success and their playoff hopes going forward. So I thought if by drafting LaMelo Ball, it'd be more of an investment for the future, but he could still be like a valuable six man, or maybe they incorporate him somehow in the starting rotation. I don't know, but probably more of a six man in the backup point guard role. That way, when Curry's out, when Curry's off the floor, just getting rest, or if he's load managing, whatever the case is, they don't miss a beat with LaMelo Ball in the lineup. And then instead they went with Wiseman. So I thought that was kind of surprising, but pretty much whatever the Warriors do, it's going to turn to gold. Like whatever they touch, it turns to gold. So I'm sure Wiseman's going to be phenomenal.
Jake's shaking his head. Yes, the year I did move here, we adopted the Warriors as our team, and it just so happened they won the championship that year. So,
yeah,
I mean,
total coincidence.
Whatever.
She's a bandwagon. She's not denying it.
Another interesting thing, speculating in the NBA. Okay, if you guys had a chance, if someone offered you $50 million, you would, like, I don't understand how James Harden rejected $50 million. I get that he doesn't want to play at Houston, but that's a lot of freaking money to reject. That I think that just goes to show how much he wants to be traded. He wants to get out of Houston. I think if James Harden actually wants to win a championship, he needs to go to a team that doesn't have any other ball hogs, because James Harden is a ball hog, and that's all he does. That's his game, is being a ball hog and doing everything himself. He's not a very good team player. I think he needs a team with big guys, a lot of big guys, not a lot of guards. I know there's been some talk in the news about how he wants to go to the Nets, but I just don't think that would be the best fit for him. I mean, it wouldn't be bad. I mean, you got Durant and Kyrie, that's a powerhouse right there with Harden. But I just don't feel like the reason Westbrook and Harden didn't play very well together, I mean, don't get me wrong, they made it to the playoffs, you know, they had a good run, but they didn't win the championship. I think it's because they're both ball hogs, their games are too much alike, and they, because they're so much alike, they like contrast with each other. James Harden needs someone that's not like him, if that makes sense. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I totally agree, because when you put the two most ball dominant guards on the same team, if there's anything that's not a recipe for success, it's that. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what happened. Like Russell Westbrook, he was actually like, he dealt with some injuries, so he kind of load managed a lot through the season, but he actually like regressed in a big way this past season. And then James Harden, like, again, did not show up in the playoffs. His classic stat pad in the regular season, put up a case for MVP, and then burn out in the playoffs and show his true colors. Happens every year. And you know what? And he can't be the guy in the playoffs. He's proven that he has to be a number two, or maybe even a number three, depending if he goes to a super team. And it seems more and more likely that he's going to be traded sooner rather than later. And right now the Nets are the obvious favorite, because it seems like KD is vouching for him within the Nets organization, but it doesn't seem like they're going to be able to put together a great package to send back to the Rockets for a team that's in potential full rebuild mode and a team with a limited number of picks. So I don't know, like, if James Harden is going to go to the Nets, but I do think he's going to be traded. And I think the 76ers are probably the bigger favorite, or probably more of a favorite at the moment, just because I think they can offer more. And they seem like they're really committed to winning. Daryl Morey, former Houston GM, is now with the Sixers. He's already made a ton of moves, and he's been super aggressive. So I wouldn't be surprised if they brought in James Harden. But then again, Mike D'Antoni, the former Houston head coach, is now an assistant head coach for Steve Nash on the Nets coaching staff. So maybe he's really pushing for Harden too. So it's between those two guys, but it's going to be interesting. I don't know. The Nets, though, it doesn't seem like they can really give the Rockets what they necessarily want for in return for a player like Harden's caliber.
Mm-hmm. The thing about Harden is, you know, you think about the thing that I think about is Michael Jordan. I mean, obviously I wasn't born when Michael Jordan was playing basketball, but I did watch The Last Dance this past summer. And I remember before Phil Jackson was the coach before him, I can't think of his name at the moment, but Michael Jordan really liked him because he let Michael Jordan be a ball hog. He let Michael Jordan try to run the team. When Phil Jackson came, he started talking about the triangle offense, started talking about, if you want to win, you need to be a team player. You guys need to work together to win. And I don't think James Harden has found a team where he can be a team player. And I don't know if that's on James Harden. I don't know if that's on the organizations in the franchise. I don't know if that's why he hasn't won a championship, but I feel like he's not a very good team player, or at least he hasn't had the chance to show he's a very good team player. And if he wants to win a championship, he needs to prove that he can be a good team player. There's a reason yes, Michael Jordan's amazing. They wouldn't have won six championships without Michael Jordan. But Michael Jordan won all those championships because he learned how to work with teams. He learned how to get all of his teammates hyped up. I mean, that's the way I look at it. I think I'm not trying to compare James Harden to Michael Jordan because I don't think they're comparable. I don't think James Harden is in the GOAT talk or anything, but that's the way I look at it. If James Harden wants to win a championship, he needs to learn how to work as a team player.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And the thing with the Nets too is, like, it doesn't make a ton of sense, because as far as just like primary point guard duties goes, he's going to have to defer to Kyrie Irving to mm-hmm. really make that work. He's going to have to learn how to play off ball. And then at the same time, when you're fighting over who takes the last shot, he's definitely going to have to defer to Kevin Durant, because Kevin Durant is a lethal shooter. James Harden is not necessarily clutch.
No, yeah.
And so, like, I don't know if he's going to, like, physically, like, mentally be able to comprehend that he's going to have to take a reduced role by going to the Nets and that super team, potential super team. or else it's just super boom or bust with them. Like, if, because on paper, Kyrie Irving, James Harden, Kevin Durant seems great, of course. But those personalities, like Steve Nash is going to have a tough time trying to control those guys in the locker room and make those guys be team players, because those guys have not been great leaders with their respective teams so far up to this point. And they don't be coachable. So that's a really interesting situation. I don't think the Nets would be like the easy favorite out of the East, because that situation could be really great, but it could also be really toxic and it could blow up right in the face. So I don't know. It's James Harden. It doesn't seem like he's a great fit for the Nets, and the Nets don't seem like they have the resources to get James Harden. So I doubt it happens, but who knows?
I mean, speaking of point guards, that seems like they're going to be great fits. I would say Chris Paul going to the Suns. That's a great move. I think Booker needed someone that was going to be a strong, good playmaker. And I think Chris Paul is going to do just that for Booker. I think that's going to be a really exciting matchup for I think that's going to be a really exciting duo for the Suns to have on their team.
Well, yeah. And another thing that I think people aren't talking about enough is a guy who is maybe even more of a direct benefactor of the Chris Paul trade on the Phoenix Suns is DeAndre Ayton, because DeAndre Ayton's going to get way easier opportunities to score with Chris Paul, you know, feeding him. And just like you saw LeBron have a massive effect on Anthony Davis's stat line and his production this past season, I think Chris Paul's going to have that same impact for DeAndre Ayton, especially when defenses still have to worry about Devin Booker on the outside.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. I mean, because the Suns are still like a fairly young team. And so Chris Paul, I think he's like 35. I think he's definitely going to be a good mentor for all of those guys. And him and Booker should make the Suns probably definitely playoff contenders for sure.
One thing when it comes to Chris Paul, I feel like he's a very well-known player. He's very popular, but I feel like he's like kind of overrated now. I mean, you got to think like he's a great point guard. He's well-known, but he keeps getting traded. You know, he's not good. I mean, I wouldn't say he's not good enough. Maybe he wants to get traded. I don't know. He keeps getting traded to different teams. Something doesn't gel with him maybe at these organizations. I don't know what it is, but I feel like he's another player kind of like James Harden. It's like, I mean, not that they have similar styles, but it's like, why isn't he finding so much success for being so well-known? I don't know. That's the way I look at it. Maybe at the Phoenix Suns, we'll see something different that we haven't seen from Chris Paul, but that's the great thing about sports. We just don't know until it happens.
Yeah, like the main thing with Chris Paul is, for as great as he is at this point of his career, he's what, 35, 36 years old, about the same age as LeBron James. And so obviously he's lost a step from an athleticism standpoint, and he's not quite as quick defensively as he was in his prime. But the important thing to remember with Chris Paul is he, for the most part, cannot make it through an entire playoffs. Like I remember, because I'm a Clippers fan, and I remember seeing him. he went out with an earlier exit than the team every postseason. He'd always get injured, and like in the conference semis or whatever series it was, and we would end up not winning the series or not going much farther beyond that. And that's followed him to Houston, and with the Thunder, they didn't get past the first round. I think they lost to the Jazz, unfortunately, but they were playing great team ball, and it just doesn't seem like he has the durability anymore. So even like with Houston, the Rockets were absolute contenders with Chris Paul, but he was unavailable towards the end of the postseason, and it cost him in the series against the Golden State Warriors, where they were up 3-1, and then he was out for game 6 and 7, and they blew the series. So Chris Paul, it's just a durability thing with me. And as great as he is, if he's not available for the Suns down the road, then like the Suns.
Malachi Flynn is going to the Raptors. Very exciting.
Yes, sir.
What do we think about this, guys? Megan, what do you have to say? Are you excited? I mean, going on to a happier note, one of our former Aztecs just got drafted into the NBA. Tell us how you think about
it. It's incredible. I mean, let me just point out that I'm so excited that we're even getting back SEC basketball this season too, but two, just watching anyone from your college make it in the big leagues, like make it professionally, it's so inspiring. And like literally I've just being on Instagram the past like hour, I've already seen so many people post about it, repost about it, so it's so incredible, and it really just brings back the pride and joy of being an Aztec, and so fun to watch.
Really does.
Yeah, Malachi Flynn, he brings so much energy. He brought so much energy to the Aztecs, and he plays just overall an exciting brand of basketball, especially in the college basketball ranks. Like, he would have been one of the faces of March Madness if there was a tournament this season, no doubt about it. And it, like, the farther San Diego State would have gone on in the tournament, the more spotlight this guy was going to get. And unfortunately, that didn't happen. But yeah, he's going to the Toronto Raptors. This is a great organization, and he's going to have to fight Kyle Lowry a little bit and Fred VanVleet for minutes. But yeah, he is such an exciting player to watch. A great ball handler, has limitless range. Like, he can shoot it from anywhere, and he's a pretty feisty defender. He can get his hands in anywhere. So yeah, Malachi Flynn, really love the way he plays, and yeah, can't wait to see him with the Raptors.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of the men's basketball for SDSU, the first game is on November 25th against UCLA. after the Aztecs come off of their amazing season last season, with the longest undefeated streak in the nation, they really had to put the first game against UCLA. How mean is that? I mean, it'd be awesome if the Aztecs win. Like, we're gonna go crazy. That'd be amazing. But it's like one of the top Pac-12 schools. I mean, come on.
Wait, is that a home opener?
I don't know if it's home or away, but I interviewed two players on the men's basketball team today. And one of the questions, I was talking to Matt Mitchell. He's the small forward for senior small forward for the Aztecs this upcoming season. And I was like, I didn't want to say, like, I just said, what are your expectations for the UCLA game? And, you know, he gave the typical answer. We're going to come out there and play as hard as we can. You know, we're ready. And I'm just like, this just sucks. As an Aztecs fan, if they do end up winning, that'd be amazing. But unfortunately, I just don't see the same 26-0 streak we had last season going. But I mean, hey, I'm excited for basketball season, no matter what our school schedule looks like. Another thing to know about the Aztecs men's basketball team, they have about four or five freshmen, I think, on the team this year. So it's kind of a heavy freshman-heavy team. Little interesting, but I guess we'll have to see. They also have two transfers. Or two or three transfers. So some guys with experience. So it's going to be like a gel of the new guys and a gel of the veterans. So we'll see how it goes. I mean, I feel like last season, no one expected the Aztecs to be as good as they were, and they were great. And it was so fun to be a fan. This season, I guess we're hoping for the same thing.
So we're going to keep our eyes on a lot of the interesting trades that are happening in the NBA for sure. And honestly, I'm looking forward to tomorrow night's game, Cardinals versus Seahawks. That's going to be going to watch. But in the meantime, before those games, you can go ahead and follow me on Instagram at mtownsley with two Ys, and on Twitter at Megan Townsley. Also got my LinkedIn set up. Nicole, I saw you. I saw you on LinkedIn. So I don't know if you saw my little, I don't even know how that works yet. I'll figure it out. we'll figure it out as we go. But yeah.
Yeah. Go follow me, Nick Time for Sports. Also, if you want to connect with me on LinkedIn, it's my favorite app. So message me. I like to make friends on your LinkedIn.
The best way to reach her. Go to LinkedIn. Don't really go anywhere else.
I'm on it 24/7. Like, I love LinkedIn.
That's incredible.
She's not human. Go to LinkedIn. It's the only way.
Okay, and go follow Jake Burton, 419, and everything. Because I guess he doesn't want to give himself a shout out.
Totally forgot. Yeah, go ahead. Give me a follow if you want at JakeBurton419 on Instagram and Twitter. And then send me your questions too. If you ever have any questions, we can answer them on the show. We'd be more than happy to do that. I'm looking forward to those questions. So, yeah.
Okay. Well, that's all we have for the Huddle Up Podcast, Episode 6. We will not see you, but, like, you'll listen to us next week. Bye, guys. Exit music. Yes, sir.